again, the gay agenda. We are now championing the B, the much ignored, much sidelined B in the LGBT acronym. Going around the table again, I am Rylan Cavell.
I'm Andrew Deville.
I'm Lydia Burns-Myrillo.
And I'm Jen Yotney.
Lovely. So, around the table, two out of the four represent the B. Mm-hmm. So this is your chance to shine now and tell the world what's being ignored and
be
what they're overlooking.
Visible.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Jen, you've got
Be audible.
If so listeners at home would like to colour in their listening device with pink, purple and blue crayons, they can appreciate the true effect.
Yeah, so you've got a load of stuff you want to bring to us. But you, not only being an out and proud bisexualist, you have an MBE.
And for bisexuality.
Yeah.
Bisexuality to the Queen.
But you are from Biphoria.
Yep, which we will probably touch on, but is the UK's oldest bisexual organisation, 24 years old this year.
And a general all-round activist.
I am deemed, if not responsible, then adjacent to responsible for a number of things over about 25 years of bisexual activism in different hats, which is part of why the MBE thing happened, which was so bizarre.
So it's an honour to have you with us on our B show. So let's launch straight into the stuff that you've brought to the table there. So what's the first story you want to bring to us?
Well, the first one, I'm very keen on research and exploring what research tells us about LGBT people, especially these days. More and more research separates out the different strands, whereas, say, 10, 20 years ago, it tended to lump everyone together. Mm. Now we're starting to learn interesting things about people as researchers separate out and go, okay, so what is the experience of bisexual people if it's treated separately than lumping it all in with lesbian and gay? Because sometimes that reveals things that are the complete opposite of what we assumed when I was...
And I suppose if you're doing like an overarching survey or questionnaire, you might be ignoring certain questions that when you think about one particular group of people are more pertinent.
Absolutely. So one of the things, this is a piece in Bi Community News last month, actually reporting on a paper in the Journal of Bisexuality, which is one of those academic journals that I would love to get, but it costs about £100 a year if you want it in the UK, because it's published in America and academic journal prices, so I tend to receive information about it rather than ever being able to afford copies for myself. They've got a piece of research where a group of researchers, gosh, it's a long list, Flanders, Le Breton, Robinson, Bayan and Caraveca Moreira, apologies for mispronouncing all of you, asked bisexual and pansexual people aged 18 to 30 a series of questions regarding their definitions of bisexuality. And they found 49 participants identified as bisexual out of the set of 60 that they particularly focus on, 11 as pansexual with a gender split that's 32 female, 20 male, 7 genderqueer and 1 refusing to answer. I like the fact that some of these things add up to 60, because I think that's... No, that must have been a little bit of the survey design being wrong, because I can definitely identify as several of those labels. So I always expect on those sorts of questions for things to add up to at least 101% or 79%, because you forgot to put a particular box on the form. But what I found interesting about this was the way that people in there were... much more so than in my observation of young people over the last 10 years or so, kind of rolling back to the B word as a label, because we have this phase, and I blame it on Tumblr, where the B word was a bad word. And if you were starting to come out as being attracted to people of more than one gender, then there was this kind of cultural thing of you can't be bisexual because bisexual is an evil, oppressive word and you're hating on trans people by owning that word.
So being bi, also binary then?
Yeah, the idea bi is binary, which for a start it doesn't, because the concept of bisexuality, you know, if you imagine that binary world of male and female and which one are you attracted to, bisexuality, by saying that the word is not or but and, breaks down any kind of binary thing. If you're building an old-fashioned computer, if you're Alan Turing assembling an early computer, you've got ones and zeros, and this is the, oh, can I have something that's a one and a zero at the same time, please? And it doesn't work as a binary thing. But it became such a big thing, it derailed loads and loads of bisexual activism into fighting a war pointlessly over labels rather than actually dealing with any of the other interesting statistics that were coming forward about what bisexual life is like and how it was different. It's interesting looking at this because also, I mean, it goes on and says, of the interviewees, the majority said they used binary language like being attracted to both women and men to explain their sexuality to others. But the thing about that is, and they go on and say this, one of the participants is quoted saying, unless I actually understood the other person understood trans issues and basic queer theory, I would just say, I don't care if you're a man or a woman. Leave out all the other stuff because that's a whole separate can of worms. And actually, there is this thing of, you know, I've been doing queer activism-y things for 2.5 decades or something. And so I've thought about lots of things that the average sort of punter on the street, the member of your family you're thinking of coming out to as bisexual or whatever it might be, hasn't done all of that thought. And you need to express ideas in ways that people actually understand to get them through the door.
It's baby steps, isn't it?
Stay away from the jargon. Yeah.
We can say bisexual. So what do you... And if someone's, what do you mean by bisexual? Then if their understanding of the world just comes from being straight and cisgender and reading the Daily Mail or the Express or something, then I'm attracted to men and women. It's about as mind-blowing as you can probably go on day one.
The head actually explodes.
So there's this notion that bisexuality is binary because it's got bi on the start of it. And to me, that's totally broken because, I mean, my favourite fruit is the strawberry. The first half of that is straw, and I don't eat them because I like the taste of straw. Right? It's a weirdly prescriptive thing. We don't think that Christmas is in December and that that's the 25th of the 10th. But deck on December means 10. We understand language has evolved and moved on, and we still use historic words because actually most of us aren't that worried about the etymology of every word we use. Mm. Not all lesbians are from the Isle of Lesbos. Gay men are not obliged to be happy 24 hours a day.
Those of them I know pretty much are there.
Yeah, but you know, there's that thing on February the 29th where they have being sad gays. But it's a peculiar double standard that we've endured, and that's, I think, reflects almost the hierarchical position of bisexuality in the queer umbrella, that you could throw all that kind of mud at bi in a way that you couldn't at other labels. Mm. As a notion, it came from a couple of academics about 10 years ago who were doing some stuff around gender and sexuality, and what they were trying to do was to say that I think not all bisexuals are attracted to trans people. But instead of saying some people are attracted to trans people, some people aren't, they tried to redefine the B word in a different way so that bisexuality means two, and that must mean cis men and cis women. Now, The transphobia in that isn't the word bisexual. The transphobia is saying if you were only attracted to two genders, well, obviously it would be cis people because those are the hot ones.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. That's a much more deeply ingrained set of assumptions about that. So it's interesting, they go, they also say there were no differences between how pansexual and bisexual people discussed sex or gender across all of the questions presented. And so people were saying, it goes on, participants would describe attraction to individuals rather than to genders when describing their bisexual or pansexual identity to someone else, without any clear-cut definition of bisexuality emerging from the respondents to separate it out from pansexuality. It's
the same thing, essentially.
Yeah. It's that thing. I always think bi is to pan as lesbian is to gay woman. I know some people, I have a friend who is militantly, I am a gay woman, I am not a lesbian, I am not one of them. She has a whole load of...
What is one of one them?
I'm curious.
It's to do with the qualification.
Ah, right, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Is that
if you're freelancing as an amateur lesbian, you can only call yourself a gay woman on the
network. Yes, exactly. It's the polytechnic. It's like an NVQ and a degree.
I remember serving my lesbian apprenticeship, but I had to leave in year three.
Basically. So I can only call myself a gay woman.
soon. One more cat and you will be there. I love that this was kind of reflecting that some of that has started to break down, that people are starting to get beyond this idea of bisexuality as an oppressive label that relies on such peculiar double standards, and to me is just a derailing tactic to prevent bisexuals tackling the big serious inequality. I mean, I look at things like the statistics on experience of domestic violence and stalking, which are straight women 35% report experience of domestic violence, stalking, abuse by partners in their lifetimes. 35% is the kind of number that makes me not want to belong to the species where that's the case.
Mm. Mm.
45% of lesbians, but 63% of bi women. Now, if you can derail dealing with things like that into, well, they shouldn't be calling themselves bisexual anyway, it's just a brilliant way of avoiding dealing with the actual problems in the real world.
Yeah.
It feels like a little bit of just get over your academic self and realise that these are people's lives instead.
Yeah, totally.
So, labels. Call yourself what you want, but it's good to see a reduction of the stigma on the B.
Absolutely. So, for those of you out there who identify as bisexual or pansexual, tweet us your opinion on all this, you know, and the sort of, you know, why you picked one word over the other, perhaps. So tweet us at Gay Agenda Radio. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
Fantastic. Should we take another little bit of news?
Go for it, yeah.
We're recording this at the start of April, and we've just had a little bit of a scary week for bisexual activists in Britain, because a week ago it looked like BiCon was not going to happen. Now, BiCon, for listeners at home going, that's a pair of made-up syllables sandwiched together. Everything's a pair of made-up syllables sandwiched together, really, isn't it? It's probably just about the oldest queer festival in Britain. It's been going for 33 years, but it's happened 36 times in that time because of weird things about how maths works. You know, if you count the number of lampposts on the street, if there's 10 lampposts, then there's only 9 gaps between them. So if they're 10 metres apart, it's a 90-metre road, not a 100-metre road. One of those kinds of things.
What? Sorry, was that the sort of GCSE math question that just sort of whizzed past me then?
Afraid, yeah. So, yeah. You're never going to qualify as a mathematical lesbian, I'm afraid.
Never, ever.
But it's coming...
If you have 3 cats and then you get 6 more...
Then that probably tells you what 2 other cats were doing. You didn't get to them with the broom quickly enough that time. So BiCon is a long weekend, kind of somewhere between a conference and a convention. So I always, in my mind's eye, it's a little bit like a sci-fi convention with slightly different dressing up. Take several hundred bisexuals, put them in a confined space for 3 or 4 days and leave them to simmer.
Sounds fabulous.
It truly is. It makes dogs howl, though. Listeners may have just been able to pick up on the edge of the microphone's range there.
He's getting excited. My other half's outside fixing the car, so he's being terribly butch.
So, BiCon daytimes, workshops, discussions, speakers, evenings of discos and grand dressing up balls and things like that. One of the things about it goes to a different city each year, so because it's particularly when it was set up, it was, there is a thing for bisexuals happening. One of the things they tried to do was to move it to a different city each year so that if you live in Cornwall, if there was a bisexual thing, but the only bisexual thing that ever happened was in Newcastle, then, well, that's a pants for you.
A bit of a trek.
So the idea was it bounces around the country, goes to different places, so one of the accessibility issues it could address was geographic. Or magic. Geographic, if I pronounce the word slightly better. I don't know where that came from. But it's kind of, if you live in the north of England, it's been the golden years of BiCon recently, because the last few years it's been in Leeds, then in Bradford, then in Preston, then in Leeds, now it's coming to Salford. Next year it's probably going to be in Lancaster. So, you know, it has the theoretical travelling all the way around the island, but it has a lot of the practical, where can you get a cheap venue to do things, and London just isn't prepared to join in the bisexual party by having cheap venues for us to book.
Sort it out, London, come on.
But yeah, so a week ago, it was looking like it was off. The team were holding up their hands and saying, we're struggling to actually pull this together because it's a volunteer-organised event.
And
things happen in people's lives. You stand up as they did 18 months ago and said, yes, we will take on the burden of running this thing. And then, you know, your job changes or your mum gets ill and needs being looked after or whatever. Stuff happens. Yesterday, a new core team to run BiCon were announced after lots of scurrying around in the background amongst people. And so we have a team. The dates are now confirmed. It's going to be in Salford, and it's starting on August the 3rd and running for 4 days, Thursday through Sunday. And you can find out about it by looking for the word BiCon, B-I-C-O-N, on the internet. You'll get 2 things. One of them is a bisexuality conference, stroke convention. The other one is a firm that makes dental implants. If you can't tell the difference between these 2 things, take potluck. You never know. You'll come away with fantastic teeth.
Or a fantastic weekend.
Yeah.
One or the other. I know which one I prefer.
The weekend.
So have you ever stepped in to help organise BikeCon in the past?
I ran it in 2000, which was combined with the 6th International Bisexual Convention. So we had 265 people for 5 days from 20 different countries, which was hugely exciting.
Mm.
That was in Fallowfield, in Manchester.
Oh.
What was it called? Oak House, part of the Owens Park campus. And then 4 years later, I ran it again. That time we did it in Owens Park, actually using the bits that are like the Owens Park Tower that people who are ever students in Manchester will have as a iconic bit of the landscape in their heads. And again, that was, you know, 300 or so people. That was the most foolish one, I think, in that I decided, let's do it for 7 days instead of three or four. Basically, it was part of the negotiation of the venue, and they kind of said, well, you can have the rooms, and we charge this much per day, or this much for a week. And I was like, hey, a week then. A week is going to cost the same as 3 days. It won't be any more work, will it?
Oh,
wait. I was young. I looked so sandblasted by time because of decisions like that made when I was young.
Well, those are the time to make those decisions, though, aren't they? When
they,
you're young.
They really are. But yeah, so it's, if you've never been in a bisexual space before, because one of the things that, as we touched on earlier, one of the hats I wear, I run Biphoria, which amongst the things it does, it organises a social support space for bisexuals to be in a room together with a bunch of other bisexuals in a community centre going, and you're around other bisexuals and seeing that they're all sorts of different people, but often with shared experiences of, for example, biphobia, whether from your friends, but maybe from your partner, which is one of the things bisexuals get, that you know, if you're two lesbians or two gay men in a relationship, you might argue about how out to be, but the fact that you're gay isn't a problem.
Yeah, you're not going to really argue about the fact that, oh my God, you're one of them gays. Well, so are you.
But for bisexuals, often we end up in mixed orientation relationships, and that can frequently be a thing where your partner wants you to shut up about that because they feel threatened by it, or they feel that you should, if they have a strong gay identity, you ought to share their strong sense of this is who I am. And so, you know, I mean, running pride stalls and things like that, you'll see two people coming towards you, and one of them is going, oh, I might pick up a leaflet kind of face, and the other one tugs them away and says, no, she used to be bisexual, but she's with me now. You just think,
No,
that's a whole set of conversation that you two must have at home that I can't argue with you about right now.
Mm-hmm.
But, and it's part of the background, bisexuality isn't real steady drip from society.
Last year I was dating for a while, and I ended up going, you know, via like OkCupid and Tinder and shit. I ended up going on a few dates with some straight women, and I just had to drop the whole thing. Because I've been in a really insular queer group for a very long time, and then I finally was like, right, let's get back into the world, let's meet some real people. And I sat down.
Real people are awful.
Terrible.
You can't do real people.
Queer people are real too.
I sat down in the bars with these people, and the more I had to stop myself because I was no longer, I'd been comfortable in this friendship group for like 6 years, but I was no longer able to speak freely for fear of what she'd think, each different woman. And then the questions, you know, the embarrassing and probing questions that you've had your entire life come up, but in this intimate scenario, and you're just like, nope, can't do this, I need a queer person. Now I have a beautiful bisexual girlfriend. But the other problem we face is now from the queer community who don't really believe that we're bisexual anymore, and so we get dirty looks in the village, and, you know, it's changed a little bit.
Yeah, it is one of those things, like I say, creating temporary social spaces, as we do, is a great thing. Gives people that little bit of, this is where I can completely be me. But unless you happen to have exactly the right work colleagues, friendship group, all that kind of thing, a big chunk of my sexuality as a life experience is self-editing all the time fit in with a gay or straight world according to where you are. So BiCon, give yourself several days where being bisexuality is normal. And it's not an exclusively bisexual space. So, you know, there are straight people, there are gay people, there are asexual people who don't feel biromantic or any of those sorts of things there as well, because it's a big, fluffy, inclusive, welcoming space. But kind of...
Is it actually fluffy, though?
Frequently. Like, a couple of years ago, one of the things, if you go to bisexual meetups around the country, a lot of them have little cuddly lions on the table, if you're, like, meeting in a pub or a cafe. It's because a few years ago... the Saturday night now always has a ball with a ball theme, and that year it was the circus.
Okay.
And they've got a big paddling pool, and they bought 300 stuffed cuddly lions in a job lot off eBay, so you could be thrown to the lions and land safely in a big pile of soft, fluffy toys. And it don't get much more fluffy than rolling around in the paddling pool with 300 stuffy lions around you.
That's amazing.
So everyone went home with a lion, because it was like, yeah, including the organisers at the end, kind of going, please take lions home with you. Please, we've got 300 of these things.
Well, that's a little signifier then, when you go and meet in the pub, if someone's a bit unsure, where's the group? Look for the lion.
Exactly.
It's a silent signal, isn't it?
And the other symbol that people use a lot these days is the unicorn. So
yeah,
for Biphoria, we have a stuffy lion and a stuffy glittery purple unicorn.
Fabulous.
This was totally unplanned, but if you think about the coat of arms of like the United Kingdom,
oh, yeah,
those are. Yeah. So we have just gone, no, we're bisexual Britain. Other sexualities are welcome to come here as immigrants, and we welcome them with open arms because we're a very different kind of Britain.
Yeah. That's so nice.
So yeah, BikeOn is back on, and it's in Salford this year, and depending on exactly when this gets broadcast, you've got a few weeks to save up your pennies to go.
Mm-hmm. What are the exact dates?
So it's the 3rd to the 6th of August, which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can, if you book early enough, you can take on-site accommodation, but you can also get day tickets or weekend passes. So if you want to, you know, leave it till the last minute, take a look at the programme when it goes up on the website and say, Friday looks a bit not my thing, but Saturday's got a lot of stuff I'd like to go to.
Sure.
You can just get a day ticket. It also operates on a sliding scale of income, so those of us who, like me, make about minimum wage don't pay anything like as much as people who make 50, 60,000 a year.
Yeah, sure.
If you are entirely on benefits, then it's cheaper still, with the people who are well off effectively subsidising the cost of attending BikeOn for poor attendees. Which is one of those things that started in 1984 when it was a good radical kind of the way that organising things happened in those days, and whereas that's drifted away from a lot of wider culture as an idea, it's one of the things that's been clung to as, no, this is the way that we enable people who really need this space and
to access it.
I mean, one of the things we've talked about on the show the other day was the pay gap, and actually one of the things when you break down the statistics on that, the pay gap gets worse for bisexuals within LGB. Including weird, I mean, one of those statistics where I just sat and went, really? And then looked at it from another country's pay gap statistics and went, oh, this seems to be a theme. For bisexual men, the pay gap is so big it erases the benefit of being male.
Wow.
Bisexual men actually earn less, even less than bisexual women do per hour, on research in the UK. It's like a really massive drop off if you come out as bisexual at work. It's, you know, I don't want to tell people not to come out as bisexual because this is how we change the world, but right now the things that reflects to you are like, you really shouldn't do that because it has really significant wage impacts on you.
That's so bizarre. I wouldn't have realised at all.
I never would have known that.
No. And one of those things, like, as I say about historically how we used to do data where we lumped everyone together, what I call lumpy data, because we want an impressive number, 10,000 respondents, so we'll put the gays and the lesbians and
all the
ginger
others.
People and, well, people who've got 3 canaries but don't own a dog. That'll get us to 10,000. There we are. And actually, when you start breaking those down and having enough information, you start to separate out some of the different experiences within the queer communities. And some of those things, because I, you know, when I first came out, the received wisdom was bisexuals are half gay, so they get half homophobia. They get some special magic privilege. Yeah. You only get beaten up down the left side of your body when queer bashers decide to have a go at you. And yet, as you start unpicking the statistics and looking at the lived experiences, the whole bisexual privilege, straight privilege thing, you wind it back and you go, actually, no, worse, not better.
Yeah, it doesn't exist at all. So, next story then.
So, that was BikeOn. One of the things that's caught my eye and made me a little bit hopeful and happy and intrigued is talk about the census. Of course,
so, again, statistics are lumping people together or not.
Yeah. Because the Office for National Statistics, again a report from Bi Community News, says the Office for National Statistics have been working on how to include sexuality questions in the 2021 census, with a pair of trials using additions both with and without a sexual orientation question. So the question they used read, which of the following options best describes how you think of yourself? Heterosexual or straight? Tick box. Gay or lesbian? Tick box. Bisexual? Tick box. Other, write in. And what they found, the addition with the sexuality question got a slightly lower return rate, but not by a lot. It's only, so 38.6% of people, without being further prompted, returned the census form. if the question was on there, and 39.0% returned it for the version without. So that's 0.4% difference. I was surprised at how narrow a gap that was.
Did you see me doing lesbian math there? So that's I'm working towards my qualification.
So older people were less likely to answer the question, which was marked as being voluntary, but there was no reduction in how likely they were to respond to the rest of the survey as a whole. So they might be skipping over it because they felt that was a young person's question, not the sort of thing that I'm prepared to answer. But yeah, they still sent the form back.
For the older generation, perhaps, there is that sort of, we don't talk about sex or sexuality, there's that sort of that Victorian veneer over stuff. Yeah. Exactly. They don't talk about that.
Victorian, it's the there is only straight, nothing else can be spoken about.
Yeah. Interesting, the surveys also returned that they showed a higher proportion of lesbians and gay men compared to last year's ONS annual population survey, up from 1.2% to 1.8%, but fewer bisexuals, which dropped off from 0.8 to 0.6. And there was a higher rate of respondents skipping the question compared to on the annual population survey as well. That's one where they spend a little bit more time kind of doing a one-to-one interview rather than just giving you the form and saying, fill this in and post it back to us.
Okay.
There are slightly different results you get as a result, as a consequence of that. I remember having an argument with some people from other LGBT organisations about, 10 years ago when we were trying to get this into the census way back then. And there was kind of like two schools of thought. Should we go for the household survey, which is the in-depth, more personal thing, or should we go for the big census? Because probably the household survey would be likely to get you a higher number of people identifying as LGB, because it's more of a one-to-one personal thing, whereas the general census, which was then being filled in by the head of household, so if you're, a 17-year-old queer living with your mum and dad fills in the form for you, then no, my daughter is not a filthy one of those.
Yeah, you aren't going to get accurate figures and results, are you?
Exactly. Being a greedy bisexual, I wanted to have both, because to me, the fact that you would get two different sets of numbers would allow you to explore, so why do we have different sets, and what does that tell us about how out people are and acceptability and how much people feel they can talk about those things, but there we go. So it seems likely we're going to get it in the census here, which will be fascinating. One of the things, so last summer I was at the European Conference on Bisexual Research, Eurobirecon.
I've got more crazy syllables all pushed together.
So many mushy syllables in a word, which was in Amsterdam the week after Amsterdam Pride. So you had this kind of like, everyone is still a little bit knackered. The Pope, but still, even compared to normal Amsterdam, a lot of queer stuff's still about, because if you've got, say, an exhibition at a museum, then that's still running a week later, isn't it? And that sort of thing. But one of the things that came out there, because there were papers presented from academics from mostly Europe, some from other places as well, was different countries ask this question differently on their survey. So in the Netherlands, so whereas we're going to say, are you, and give a series of identity labels and say, are you straight, are you gay, are you bisexual, are you lesbian? There they just had two tick boxes. Have you ever been attracted to a man? Have you ever been attracted to a woman? And you get a really different sense of what the numbers are going on there, and particularly people who you might, for policy-making purposes, health provision, etc., decide to say, okay, for our purposes, that's a bisexual person. If you have something that's that inclusive that's not right now, and going back to the issues of bisexuals being encouraged to identify as gay or as straight because of who they're dating, much easier to say, well, there was that, and I'm putting that because it's true, but not now that I'm with you, darling. But I've got to put the full honest answer on the census. And so you get a much different set of figures according to exactly how you word those questions. I know from talking to people at the ONS, they've played about with a lot of different sets of words between the battle of what data do you want to get out of this and will people understand the question you're asking.
Yeah, you want to identify what you need from the end result. Do we want to identify just the attraction? Do we want to know how people identify with labels as well? Can you fit all that in? Does it make sense to everyone? Exactly. It's tricky, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, I was just listening to a podcast actually about in the United States, their census happens a year before us. It's in 2020. And so it's a much more imminent thing. Mm. And one of the questions they're arguing about is whether to include a question of, are you a US citizen? Mm. Now, that feels to me like a very Trumpian find out how many people we ought to deport kind of a question.
Yeah.
And it was interesting listening to, it was the 538 podcast, which is a big kind of like elections predictions and monitoring kind of website and so on in the US. Listening to the different points of view there, and some of the people on that panel really not getting the idea that if you've got something like that where you could put all over it, this information will not be used to reverse identify you and no one will be sent to your house to deport you as a result of what you say on this question. But nonetheless, that's going to feel, that feels to me like something that gets a lot of people to not fill in the census and not return it.
Yeah,
because you're just not going to feel safe.
Yeah, that's the question that is going to put people off from if they weren't already turned off by the government then saying, are you a citizen?
Are you supposed to be here?
Yeah.
Are you illegal?
It's
on a scale of naughty to nice.
Yeah.
How does Santa Trump perceive you?
Yeah. Oh no, not Santa Trump. That's upsetting.
But I mean, didn't they already decide to take off any sort of sexuality questions from their census?
Sexuality from their census. Yeah, and so now we can have effectively a should we be getting round to deporting you question in its place, which. But at the same time, I mean, this is one of
those things, doesn't it?
Yeah, at the same time, this is one of those things where there are concerns for some people about sexuality on the census as a thing, because right now we can sit in Britain and say, yeah, it's going to be fine. They'll use that to prove that we have this set of needs and so on, all that kind of stuff. But as we've just seen with all the concerns people have about data leaking on Facebook and on Grindr, once that's there as a database, quite what happens to it is something where you need to not just believe in your current set of politicians controlling it, but
future ones.
The ones elected three elections from now also being
sufficiently
good people. So it's a complicated question. I think on balance that we should have it on the census, and then it's a useful thing that will teach us a bunch of things.
Yeah.
And also that once it's been on the, if it's been on the census for a few iterations, you start learning things over time.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the ONS does the big census is the every 10 years, but they do household surveys and things like that as a rolling programme. And so we've seen data coming out year on year showing, particularly for people under 25, how many more of those are identifying especially as bisexual, though also as lesbian and gay. Kind of like the year on year growth on that. It's kind of like it's a regular Bi Community News story of, you know, bisexuality up another 0.3% this year. Extrapolate this line in 2021, everyone shall be bisexual.
Mm-hmm. Exponential growth will be a big curve straight up.
Won't it? We'll have more bisexuals than people in 20 years.
Well, you say that, and
but it'll be true.
One of the things, maybe, I don't know if people want to talk about the census a bit more, but I know we were going to move on and talk about Emma Gonzalez and all of the gun protests in America. And one of the scary statistics that came out there that I didn't know before is there are, in the US, that are official, 101 handguns for every 100 citizens.
Oh, God.
And I just feel that's not a well-armed citizenry, that's a well-staffed armoury.
Yeah. No, I don't like that statistic at all.
Yeah. I mean, there are obviously, if you then say, so who has them, then suddenly you find that, you know, 83% of the guns are in the hands of 20% of the population, or those kinds of numbers. Yeah, some people have a lot, and a lot of people
Gunny McGunnison has like 10,000 guns and should be excluded from the data.
Shooting like bang bang, trying to go around making his noise and like blowing stuff up. But, you know, those, you know.
He's an outlier.
Yeah, so I've just always been anti-guns. If you want to do it as a sporting thing, you go target practice, whatever it is, fair enough. If you're going to like just have a gun, in air quotes, for protection.
Just in case.
Like, if no one has guns, you don't need a gun to protect you. Mm-hmm. You know, get a shillelagh.
What's a shillelagh?
Like a big club.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, get a baseball bat. You know, it's less deadly. Yeah, you're more likely to cause someone perhaps a broken bone than death. If someone breaks into your home and you need to defend yourself, then it's fair game in that respect. Just don't shoot them. Anyway.
Or yourself.
Or yourself. Yeah. I think, isn't it, I can't remember the numbers now, but I'm pretty
more
sure.
More members of the family killed by guns than burglars.
Yeah.
Even in the scenarios in which there's a burglar present, normally it's members of the family that get hit instead.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that the number of, like, toddlers who shoot their parents is ridiculously high as well.
And siblings, yeah.
Look, and Daddy, siblings. I've got your gun. Poof. Oh, look, Daddy, you've got no hand.
In this country, it's embarrassing and it gets a laugh when a child runs downstairs with someone's vibrator in their hand going, look what I found. Well, can you imagine if it's a handgun that you kept in your bedside table instead? And,
oh, my God.
Crazy.
Yeah, that'd be a whole different sort of expression on my face rather than, yeah. Oh, no! Oh, blimey. Anyway, so let's move on to another news story. Are we going to go on to Gonzalez now then? Are we talking about gun crime?
Okay, let me.
This is
more serious stuff before we start with the Aaron Carter stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. There it is. Emma Gonzalez, who is my hero.
Hero and a bisexualist.
Yeah, she's just amazing. So, bisexual Parkland survivor Emma Gonzalez has been targeted by viral Twitter hoax. So, this is about. She was photographed tearing up a target, but then someone photoshopped it. Like, who is really believing that this was a real image? I mean, like, seriously, it's a bit too on the nose. She was tearing up the Constitution. It really is like, of all the things she could have done, that's like the thing that.
We'll get the most gun nuts crazy.
And yet, no one, like, all these people are like, oh, this is terrible that she's doing this. She never did this. Photoshop is the worst. And do you know, this is still on topic, I promise. Have you heard of deepfake?
Yes. Deepfake?
Deepfake. Okay,
is this fake news that's become ingrained?
Right, okay, so you've got this image, which we will probably post on either on the website or on the Facebook page. Where, you know, you can't really tell that it's been photoshopped. It's not obvious photoshopping. It could be real.
It's well executed.
It's well executed. Thank you. That's so basically, you could be watching a porno. Yeah, be watching porn.
Right.
I've never called it a porno in my life. I don't know why. Watching a porno.
We've shifted to the 70s.
Yeah. So you could be watching a pornographic movie with a celebrity in it.
Yeah.
And that celebrity has been photoshopped into that porn.
Okay.
So, or you could be watching a politician make a speech.
Right.
And that whole video is photoshopped. That person was never there. That person never said that thing.
But when it's so convincing that the public just accepts it as fact like that.
It's, you literally don't know what's real and what's not. Mm.
And that's deep fake.
And right. It's a thing.
So
and it's friggin' terrifying.
Very, very convincing forgeries of truth.
And at a level of the things that until very recently you felt you could trust. So yeah. You might see the headline says, oh, this. And you're like, okay, but what's the actual quote? But if you then went and found like the video footage of the politician saying something, then, okay, so the headline said this, but actually if you listen to the whole of the sentence, not the middle seven words, they clearly meant something quite
very different.
than what's being said. But if you've got a believable their face and their voice saying the whole thing.
And the thing is, so I think it was Adobe, but I might be wrong, did this whole thing about it with Key and Peele, the comics, Key and Peele.
Oh, okay, right.
With Peele, where he said something and they messed with it and he said something else. And it was all, ha-ha, isn't that funny? Isn't that amazing? Not isn't that terrifying? Mm-hmm. So it's slightly off topic, but basically, you can't trust anything that you see anymore.
Mm. Question everything.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Oh. See, I was questioning my own question.
Yeah, because I said so. So Emma Gonzalez has been targeted by this fake Photoshop where she's been photographed tearing up a target and they photoshopped it so it looks like she's tearing up the Constitution.
I mean, it's a dreadful thing to do when she's fighting for safety in schools, essentially. She's just not trying to steal everyone's guns personally. She's fighting for survival for America's young people and for them to feel safe in their schools, and currently, obviously, they don't. And what's the solution to avoid handguns coming into the school? Transparent backpacks. Not to ban guns.
And did you know that this isn't the first time they've introduced transparent backpacks? They did the same thing, if I remember reading rightly, after Columbine.
Okay.
At that school, they introduced.
But once the shooting's happened, there's no. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of a pointless endeavour.
Mm hmm. The horse has already bolted, but unfortunately that horse has murdered 17 people.
Yeah.
you know.
A murderous horse.
Murderous horses.
Poofing people in the face with a gun.
Guns don't kill people. People kill people.
Sometimes horses kill people.
If they have a gun.
Yeah.
yes, that was an Eddie Izzard paraphrase. So
it's cruel, isn't it? She's fighting for safety, mm-hmm. and people are just more concerned about being able to own a gun.
Guns than children,
than young people's lives. What a twisted morality is that?
So, and she is like, she is such a super cool bisexual woman. She's amazing. She's so brave, and she's so outspoken, and she doesn't take any crap. She just goes out there and she's like, this is what we want. This is what we're going to do about it. I call BS.
It takes a lot of guts to be able to stand there in front of the world press. It's not just local. It's not just national. I mean, it's the world press. And to say these things when you know most of the country's against you.
When you were 17, all those years ago, when you were 17, I couldn't have done this.
I don't think I could.
You know, especially being gay as well, like I was too busy trying to work out how to come out to my friends at that point, you know, and hiding a huge part of myself. So to then take on politics is just amazing.
Mm. I think it's partly, in no way dismissing Emma's work on this, but it's partly a little bit of luck of the draw because we've had so many of these.
Mm.
Almost statistically, at some point, we were going to get someone emerge who could be that figurehead because the right school, the right school with the right pupil that's a survivor and all those kind of things would happen. If it hadn't been this one, it would have been three school shit because they are now so frequent, you know. We could almost say, well, it would have been this many in the future, but that would still be this year.
Mm.
Kind of a thing. It's interesting because when she's talked about coming out as bisexual and her experience in writing class, coming out as bisexual and how that empowered her. And I guess one of the things that's different than when we were young is access to a whole bunch of support, resource, information stuff that the way that the web has transformed that experience for people from that generation. You know, we talk about it being this year being 30 years since Section 28 came in and the impact that had on us. If you're someone who's 18 now in the UK, Section 28 went out of law. If you're in Scotland, it stopped being law the year you were born. If you're in England and Wales, it stopped being law when you were three. So you've grown up with some of the hangover, but it hasn't been there. And while that stuff has started to retreat, meanwhile, all that access to information and support and finding other people like yourself, as well as also finding a lot of absolute nonsense, has been there for you to trawl the internet and try and learn good things. And
I can remember the moment I heard the word bisexual for the first time. And I was like 15 at an end of school party. And there was a girl there who was bisexual. And it totally piqued my interest. But I wasn't, I was still completely in the closet. I hadn't even identified it to myself. But I heard this word and I was like, ooh. And I was eavesdropping because she wasn't a friend of mine. And that's how I first heard that word. And when I came out right at the beginning, when I was 17, I wrote, I'm bisexual, on a piece of paper. And like slid it across to my best friend in my English class, and she went, "Oh, okay," and carried on. That was how I started coming out, and it eventually it was never a phase. It was just a transition. It was learning what was right for me, and at that time, that was easier for me to do than to just say I'm gay. I think.
Mm-hmm. But you felt compelled to do that later.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no. What you were saying then about the point at which you hadn't yet really admitted it to yourself, I think that was about 3 years for me. I think it was like, started struggling at about 12, subconsciously. And it was about 15 where I was like, no, that dick looks good. it took a while.
You've been staring at it for 5 years.
Whose was it? I'm curious now.
Nobody knows, it was just left on the table.
No, it was some porn or whatever, though. It was more the, like, watching straight porn.
and you find yourself, your eyes flitting between the two people, and you're like, am I really finding both of these guys attractive? Like, no, 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 no. And then at some point, I think I pushed myself into putting a gay porn on. I think that was like a big step to see whether I could be turned on by that. And when I was like, no!
Because in a gay straight culture, that means I'm gay.
Yeah.
Even though I've been wanking myself silly over the girls in the last seven pornos I watched.
Well, thus ensued another, 7 or 8 years of, maybe 10 of like deep confusion of like warring between the sides. I'm like this, I'm like that, because society said one thing, my brain said another, my past said a different, my family said completely different. So there was just the 10 years of complete, what's the word I'm looking for?
Chaos?
Cognitive dissonance, really. It's a chaotic mind.
Yeah.
Where you can't really ever be sure of your own identity. And it's only like when you get enough observable evidence under your belt, you go, no, I am bisexual, I do like both. You're all wrong.
Yeah, it takes a while to actually know and understand yourself sometimes. And like I know, for myself, I was pretty clear early on, and that's quite rare for a lot of people. I knew from very young, I'm not like everyone else. And it wasn't until it was actually from Jerry Springer, that I heard the words bisexual and gay. And I was like, oh, right.
I wasn't allowed to watch those programs.
There's a whole musical called Jerry Springer Saved My Life in this.
And, yeah. It's a rock opera.
You mean a cock opera?
Possibly. So I got quite lucky in the fact that I understood quite early on, I think. I know exactly what I am. But I still went through that sort of that. I didn't go through a bisexual phase. I went through the phase of calling myself bisexual to get everyone else to understand what path I was on.
You were building a bridge.
Yeah.
Yes. That's exactly right.
I'm stuck on the bridge.
It's that thing of, I mean, it's one of the things we suffer from as bisexuals, is the idea of bisexuality is a stopping off point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People will say to you, oh, you're bisexual. Oh, don't worry. I was bisexual too until I came out fully.
Yeah.
And it's just like, no. You're half gay. No. You know that bi and bisexual? That's because I'm 200% queer. And it's one of the things that, as a result, people then get boxed off and I must pick a team from these two popular teams and identify with. I mean, running a support space for bisexual people, I know we get similar quantities of people coming along who have previously identified as gay or lesbian and have now gone, and I've met this guy or I've met this girl, and that's turned my life upside down. Mm. And also, a whole load of my friends freaking hate me now, who were my queer peer group and who I thought I was okay with.
That's
who are now going, you've given up your... I love Tom.
You've returned your queer badge.
Yeah. Tom Robinson, the singer of Glad to Be Gay back in the 70s, got then a tabloid expose in about 1986 in the News of the World. Britain's number one gay and his leather-clad lesbian biker girlfriend. And he'd got together with a woman who he met through, queer liberation circles, and it just happened to be, I talked to him about it a few times, and it's kind of like they basically just, if you like, being so far along the Kinsey scale that you're practically a 6, but there's the odd exception. And he happened to meet and click the exception, and suddenly, he was booed off stage at London Pride, the following London Pride, on the grounds that he had betrayed the gay community. He'd got a single into the charts about being gay in the 70s. How betraying the gay community is he?
Yeah.
And when he performs Glad to Be Gay, he does it with an extra verse on the end about experiencing biphobia from the gay community the number goes up every time. For so many years, I fought for the right for people to love just whoever they like. Now the right on the righteous are out for my blood because I live with my kid and a woman I love. And it's just all those things about gay liberation that were such beautiful ideals in the 70s being corrupted into you must behave perfectly for the tribe as strictly demarked a sense of how you are allowed to be a woman, how you are allowed to be a man in our community, as everything you fought to escape from in the 50s and 60s. It's tragic when we get people through the door who are having that, who are finding that their friends have disowned them when, I think possibly, I don't know what your experience of this is, but with queer friends, when I first encountered this, I started, I think, with my guard lower. Because I expected people who had thought about this and had to go through all the stress of coming out themselves to have a little bit more freaking clue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a bit more understanding, a bit more sort of compassion towards you.
Thankfully, my friendship group are largely bisexual. The queer, the gay, lesbian and straights are in the minority. It's mostly bisexual. So it's a little bit easier for me within my friendship group. But whenever we step outside of that, it really, the difference, the gradient between what we experience day to day and what we experience in the street is massive. Sorry, that's my phone going off. But it's mostly from the gay community these days, the LGBT guys. Like, the straight community have gotten kind of a little bit past openly gay by men, sorry, openly by men being just the most disgusting thing in the world. And it's now getting to the point where it's kind of cool. And that should be okay with that, but it makes me kind of angry. But I'll talk about that more later. But it's the being, it's the feeling unwelcome in my community spaces that really gets to me. It's the stigma from the people who we assumed would be there for us. Because at least when I was comforting myself when I was a teenager, when I was realizing I was bisexual, I was like, at least, you know what, like, I'll have my pick of everyone. I'll be able to sleep with whoever I want. They'll be like, it'll be amazing. And then when I got to the adulthood and it was none of those things, it was all those doors are closed to you and you can only associate with other bisexual people who are openly bisexual. You realise how small your world is, you know.
Mm. Yeah, the double the chance of a date on a Friday night line that gets trotted out to you is just
not
that's so far removed.
Bullshit.
Unless, yeah. You know, in the same way as Team Me, my chance of a date on a Friday night with my level of flirt skills and clue was zero, and doubling it. Readers at home may wish to get out a pen and paper and work out what twice zero is, but I'm going to spoiler the answer, and it was I still didn't get any dates. But when you say that, I'm interested because, as you just touched on, how, kind of like almost the where is that gradient of acceptance of I'm bisexual, this is cool and accepted with some straight people now, but then if they actually go as far as the thought of dating me,
yeah, then it's not.
And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of like being the little the token trophy, oh, I've got one, rather than this is an accepted person in
it's
my
the difference
world.
Between having an acquaintance who you think is cool and a bit of a trophy, like you said, and having an intimate relationship with someone. You can tell, I've seen the look on straight women's faces before when I've been on dates with them, when I've said, oh no, I'm bi, like, I like both. And, you know, it always initiates with, like, is that just, like, a thing or a hobby or something? You know, is it, or is it, like...
a hobby.
A hobby. Yeah, like
I'm a hobbyist bisexual.
Yeah. Or cycling. My hobbyists are cycling, reading, and penises.
as much as they tend to maintain an air of curiosity and sort of respect, the look on their face has disgust at the thought of having intimate contact with someone who's had intimate contact with someone of the same gender. It's this idea of sort of transference of gay. Like, you can associate with them, fine, but you can't have sex with someone who's had sex with someone of the same sex. If you could hear that.
So it's almost like they are...
The thought of my penis near a man's bum to a straight woman still elicits a reaction of disgust. So, and they find it difficult to think about.
It's like that it may have been near a lot more women's bottoms than men's bottoms.
It hasn't, but... Go on.
And would they also almost infer sort of like lesbian by proxy? Because...
Just the... Yeah, I don't even know. I didn't... Because when people look at you with the look of disgust, I tend not to drill too far down into that. You know, I'm not that much of a masochist. I like being choked.
It's not a Mrs. Doyle. I'm bisexual. Will you go out with me? Go on.
I've always just gotten the impression that they've never really thought about it before, that a lot of straight people have never been in a relationship with a bisexual before. So really, the onus is on me to explain it in full and calmly at the time, but it's rarely that easy.
I suppose there's, you know, for a woman going into what will ostensibly be an opposite sex relationship, the fact that you're bi doesn't really mean a great deal.
Well, to me it does. I would still have to consider that a queer relationship, the same way I do with
my current girlfriend. What I mean is the semantics for them. It's like, they are dating a guy.
Oh, yeah.
That's it.
Experientially, it doesn't make a difference to them. Yeah. I might be a little bit more feminine than the normal guy because I've spent so long in the queer community, but other than that, like, I'm never going to... I don't know. Maybe they fear the day that I ask them to use a strap-on or something.
One of the things that it, I think where it has a root is in the 80s and HIV, because I think there's a big strong gendered, to get all binary here for a moment, there's a big strong gendered reaction to I'm bisexual and I'm a man versus I'm bisexual and I'm a woman.
Yeah.
If you're any other gender, genderqueer, whatever, then just, oh, well, I wasn't going to date you anyway because you do my head in and it's far too terrifying. So, you know, as a genderqueer person, we need the strong bisexual community, so I have lots of people to date. But whereas for straight men, bi women are marketed as this great titillating the promise of a threesome, which will be with a girl thing. For straight women, the receipt, I mean, even at the level of, if you look at problem pages, you know, open up your Sun, other tabloids with awful problem pages are available. Open up your problem page and take a look. And if it's, hi, I'm a guy and I found out that my girlfriend is bisexual, what does this mean? Then it's, oh, you might be up for a threesome, but it's not guaranteed. And if it's, I'm a woman and I'm straight and I found out that the guy I'm thinking of going out with is bisexual, what does this mean?
Get him tested.
He's going to cheat on you. He's going to give you a disease. You're going to get something horrible because bisexual men are insatiable. But there's a historical thing in that of where we were in the 80s with the AIDS crisis and what we had to do as a community. That activists then use the existence of bisexual men to steamroller politicians into doing something about HIV because evil bisexual men will spread AIDS from gays on whom AIDS is God's judgment to wholesome string of pearls, respectable straight women in, you know,
Cumbria.
Yeah.
Or wherever.
In the home counties. And therefore, they will get HIV if you don't do something to stamp it out in the gay community. And at one level, we deal with that, and we deal with that as a stigma, particularly for men in the bisexual community now, still, because, well, clearly they're unsafe and they're going to cheat on you and it's all going to be awful and you're going to get horrible disease. At the same time, when I think about the situation of the gay campaigners in the 80s who were doing that, when I want to critique people for doing something and say you shouldn't have done that, I want to say you should have done this instead, because otherwise I'm just whining.
Yeah.
And yet I don't have anything you could have done in the 80s to save lives that was less harmful. That was the, we've got to throw someone under the bus, and this is the least amount of throwing someone under the bus we can do to save the lives of the people who are dying all around us. So I think it's important we talk about and understand where that stigma still has an effect in our community. But I don't criticise the people who we've wound up in this place from, because if all of your friends are dying around you like that, whatever the hell you've got that you've given me to throw under the bus, great, we'll let that bus have the bumpiest ride it can. But it's something where I think part of that stigma, aside from the general, ooh, so they do things with bottoms and it's dirty,
and
so on, all that kind of nonsense, I think that part of it is just the, you've been told that they are bound to cheat, you're bound to get a disease, so you don't want to do this, is a still carrying stigma that, you know, it's that thing where we experience biphobia differently by gender on that, and bisexual women get a different in to, you're dating a straight man, and the, oh, so therefore you, but no, maybe, you know, I mean, I love, a lot of people dislike the film Chasing Amy for how it represents things and doesn't use particular words and all those kind of things, but I love the fact that that contains the whole speech she does in the car park of, no, this isn't about us having threesomes. I did all kinds of interesting, creative, sexual things when I was younger. But right now, I just want a monogamous relationship with you, because to me, you are everything I need in my life right now and for as far into the future as I can see. And this is me. I am not some bisexual woman you've got out of a magazine that you fulfills all these imagined versions of who I am. I am a real three-dimensional human being who is here right now and at this point in my life. And I love that gave, it's like a scene that, it's kind of entertaining because I hear so much critique of it and then I watch it with, particularly with bi women who have dated straight men, and you just get a little punch in the ear moment when she does that.
Nice. Well, we come up to the end of time for our B show. Is there anything you want to squeeze in the last couple of minutes before we finish
up? I've got a silly one.
You're a silly one.
Yeah.
Shall we end on a silly?
Yeah, let's end on a silly.
Okay, let's end on a silly then.
Silly annoying, though.
Silly annoying. Oek.
Oek. So, Aaron Carter has gone back into the closet.
So, 90s pop sensation, is that the right word for him? I don't know.
He was a child star.
Child star.
He was so young when he started singing. He was misconstrued when he came out as bisexual last summer. In a since deleted tweet, Carter said he wanted to share something he felt was important for my family, for myself and my identity that had been weighing on his chest for nearly half his life. This doesn't bring me shame, just a weight and burden I have held onto for a long time and would like lifted off me, he said. I grew up in this entertainment industry at a very young age. When I was around 13 years old, I started to find boys and girls attractive. There were years that went by that I thought about it, but it wasn't until I was 17 years old, after a few relationships with girls, I had an experience with a male that I had an attraction to, who I also worked with and grew up with. He claims that calling him bisexual on these revelations is a misreading. He was asked during a recent interview with Hollywood Life if he was in an open relationship with another man. Yeah, no, he said. It was more so just a story that happened when I was like 17 with somebody. And I can find men and women attractive, but when it comes down to it, I think it was a little misconstrued. I see myself being with a woman and having kids. I want to have a family. I keep telling people that he said that I don't want it to be misconstrued too much just because I was open about a story. I guess, you know, everyone should identify the way that they feel that they should identify. But it does kind of sound like...
pretty bi.
Yeah, he sounds pretty bi.
Or he sounds pretty like he was bi then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, there is that thing, we, as bisexual activists, we always fight against the it's just a phase thing. And for me, actually, sometimes, you know, things are a phase. You go through a phase in your life where you... all sorts of things that aren't sexuality that we don't talk about as being phases. For example, being pregnant. That's a phase. If you're still doing it after 12 months, you really need to see a doctor, right? But we don't then say, well, it's just a phase. You're only going to be like this for 40 weeks, so shut up about it and stop making a fuss in the way that the implied what comes next from bisexuality is just a phase is, so shut up, we're not going to talk about that. And for some people, being bisexual is a phase. But the thing about that for me is that also whatever may have come before it is a phase, and whatever may have come after it is a phase, and you don't know if this phase is forever until the day you die. You know, he may be now, basically, for where, in my favourite analogy of bisexuality as being like the English Channel, with straight at Dover and gay at Calais, and all everywhere in between is some kind of wet, but you might feel that you're 2 miles out from Calais and you feel like you're in French territorial waters, so lesbian is a better word for you. And someone else swimming right next to you might go, no, bisexual, because it's the label that works for them. You know, and you pick the labels that work for you right now to express who you are and that make sense for you. It's, I mean, I love bisexual as a label because it is such, in that analogy, you've got two fixed points and a huge great range of places you can be.
Yeah.
Bisexual is like the biggest box in the world. But if being in that box stops working for you, then don't feel that you've got to keep using the same label every day of your life, because it's just how you express a set concept between one grunting evolved ape to another.
You put it so poetically. I love it. Well, it's time to draw to a close now on our B show. So Jen, Lydia, Andy, thank you so much. Do tweet us at @GayAgendaRadio. Let us know what you think about the stories we're covering, any ones that you want us to cover in our future seasons throughout the year. Or just to have a lovely chat on Twitter. Do it.
Have a lovely time.
Yeah. #lovelytime. And and we're online, thegayagenda.co.uk. Tatty bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.